the bill to defund Planned Parenthood. Will the governor sign it? Education reform is a reality. The effort to suspend the state gasoline tax, birthers at the state house, winners and losers in the General Assembly, primary predictions, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 29, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the Indiana House voted for an abortion bill that would take taxpayer funding away from Planned Parenthood. The vote was 66 to 32 to send the bill to the governor's desk. It's a bill that the author says would make Indiana the most pro-life state in the country. The original measure would prohibit abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy instead of 24. It was amended by the state Senate to take taxpayer funding away from Planned Parenthood. Opponents of the bill say it could actually lead to more abortions in Indiana.
And if this agency's funding is cut, the education will not be there. The contraceptives will not be there. And there will be more children born in our state to mothers that are not prepared and they don't know what to do.
What is going to happen if there's no access to abortions? We're going to have children, people, women having babies more often, closer together.
Will the governor sign the abortion bill? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, how could the governor justify a veto?
Oh, I don't think he's going to justify a veto. I think if he has any national aspirations in the Republican Party, either for president or vice president, he's going to sign it, knowing it's unconstitutional, knowing that it's indefensible, even from a pro-life standard, it's indefensible, and they're going to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars litigating, and then they're going to lose. And in the meanwhile, they're going to deprive women who are poor of cervical cancer screenings and birth control and other preventive measures, and you know, they're just making war on women, but he'll sign the bill.
The governor says he's going to do some research first, and here's why. The supporters of the bill say that the money that would otherwise go to Planned Parenthood can go to community health clinics and provide the same services, but the federal government may not agree with that.
Yeah, he's right. They're right to do the research, because although I think he's in complete agreement with the core portions of the bill, you have to take a look at what that means as far as the funding is concerned before you agree to do this. And I think that's the research they're going to do, and they're smart to do that before they make a decision one way or the other.
So if the money can't go to community health centers, do you expect him to veto the bill?
It depends on how that works and what it really means. I mean, there are all kind of variations and interpretations of what that means, and I think we have to wait and see.
Everybody talks about how at one point the governor said that there should be a ceasefire on social issues, a truce.
I guess was the term he used. Yeah.
How does this fit with that?
Well, he, needless to say, has been asked that question a lot about the truce. And at one point in the session, when things were starting to heat up on some of the social issues and the non-fiscal policy issues, he told a media outlet that, you know, he wasn't talking about the General Assembly in Indiana. He was more focused on Congress at that point. So he's inserted a little bit of wiggle room into that. He also said early on that the truce was necessary to prevent the economic issues from being derailed. So I guess what constitute a derailment is in the eye of the beholder. Some would argue the state has a budget, so it didn't get in the way, it didn't impede. So there are ways mm-hmm. that he could defend it and probably will. But I think this decision clearly is not happening in a vacuum. It is about political aspirations, presidential aspirations. If he...
Well, the authors of the bill don't have presidential
no,
aspirations.
No, but I'm talking about the veto here is all about... If he truly had no desire at all, just out and out, yeah, said no, he probably would veto the bill because it clearly is going to cost dollars, either through litigation or through the $4 million in additional funding for indigent health care for women, or potentially, according to some estimates, $68 million over a period of time for the treatment and care of women who don't have prenatal care and are delivering babies that right, don't have a support system.
So if you're Mitch Daniels and you're looking to run for president and people think you're too moderate and you're trying to win over Republican primary voters, this is teed up perfectly.
Well, it's teed up to make his decision interesting, Jim. Last I looked, they hadn't delivered the bill to the governor. So the clock hasn't started running on when he has to act on it. When that happens, he's got 7 days. I anticipate that, you know, he said there'll be no decision this weekend on his presidential aspirations, but it's not unreasonable to think in the next week, 10 days, there may be a decision. So these things are going in tandem. And I think that you will see his decision be factored into on what he's going to do with the bill and what he's going to do about presidency is all going to be factored together. And I think we'll know, you know, this time next week or so.
Should we expect a legal challenge if he signs it?
There's no question about it. You can't single out one entity like this. It's like saying I could pass a bill saying Jim Shella can't run for governor. You can't do that. Never mind the other issues that are there. The Supreme Court has said when viability starts. Okay, it isn't when the Indiana General Assembly says viability starts. And on and on and on. They're giving them medical information that's incorrect and on and on. The problem, the dilemma that Mitch Daniels has here is he's holding himself out as a moderate, okay? This is extreme right legislation. And if he signs it, then he's in that camp. But he has to be in that camp if he's going to get the Republican nomination, because when you look at what the Republican Party is controlled by extreme right-wing Tea Party people. And so you can't get to a national aspiration without it. So he's in a dilemma. If he takes the principled position and vetoes that bill, he deserves a lot of credit.
This whole idea of being the most pro-life state in the country—that, first of all, that'd be difficult to maintain. Others are going to catch up. Is it important? Why is it important?
It's not. This is a matter of we're number one. But I'm going to disagree with everybody here, from the standpoint that I don't think that is the kind of thing that Mitch Daniels calculates in making a decision like this. I think he's proven over and over and over again he's willing to make tough decisions based on what he thinks is the right thing to do. And I think that's going to decide what's going to happen with this piece of legislation, not his potential aspirations to run for president of the United States. In fact, if there's a detriment to Mitch Daniels, it may be that more times than not, he doesn't think in those kind of terms. And by talking about the issues that he talks about, by doing things like talking about a truce on social issues and those kinds of things, I think he's proven over and over again in this state that he decides these issues based on what his personal beliefs are, and I don't think this is a political calculation for him.
If it's not, then he vetoes it.
I don't think it is for him.
If it isn't, then he
vetoes
it.
Well, that's your interpretation. It may not be his.
Yeah, well.
Let's move on. The final elements of the governor's education reform package won approval in the Indiana House of Representatives this week, a bill to expand charter schools and a bill to create the biggest school voucher system in the country are both headed to the governor's desk. The House voted 61-37 for the charter school bill, with Democrat Marianne Sullivan joining the Republicans in the effort to expand charter schools so that some 30 private colleges could become sponsors. The vote was closer on the voucher bill, 55-43. It produced a long debate, with the objections coming over the possibility that $58 million will be redirected from public to private schools in the form of scholarships to low and middle income students.
In every case, only if the family, the mom and the dad, say my kid needs a better choice. So I think this bill is all about the children.
I believe we are ill prepared to deal with it. I believe it raises all problems, kinds of problems of church and state, an issue that doesn't seem to resonate anymore, except in the Indiana Constitution.
Representative Ed Delaney there, preceded by Representative Jeff Espick, Mike McDaniel. Does the success here make up for the defeats suffered by the governor on local government reform and prison reform?
Well, this is clearly a huge success. I mean, these education reforms are probably the most sweeping as a package that you've seen anywhere in the United States, especially this year. And I think it's consistent with where Mitch Daniels said he wanted to go when he took office, after he took office in the first term. So, you know, it's a great, great victory for him and for Tony Bennett and for the people that have worked so hard on these issues for so long. But when you add vouchers with charter school expansion, with merit pay for teachers and limiting in reasonable terms what you can bargain for, I mean, that's pretty comprehensive stuff, and it's a great win for education reform in Indiana.
Both of these proposals were scaled back from the original. The vouchers won't go to families with higher incomes. And in the charter school case, second-class cities, the mayors can't be sponsors. Are those improvements?
It lessens the detrimental effect on public education, so I suppose they're improvements. But you're going to litigate this one, too, because, you know, there's no separation of church and state here. The checks are going to be made payable to the schools, which is a violation of the Indiana Constitution, and those schools are not required to be handicapped accessible. The only reason that religious schools are exempt from the ADA right now is because they're only supposed to be catering to those in the same religion. If you have vouchers here, they're supposed to be admitting any student with that voucher, regardless of what the religion is. So you're going to have this statute running right counter to that. They're basically saying to children with disabilities, you don't have a choice, okay? You're stuck because we don't want to make it handicapped accessible for you. So this is going to be litigated, and I think it's going to be thrown out.
Some people who are coming out on the short end this week suggested that maybe the jobs that were created in this session were for attorneys.
There's no question about that.
Do you see this surviving a court challenge? What the supporters keep saying is that the state gives scholarships to students who go to private colleges, and it's the same thing.
No.
It's not the same thing because the private colleges, there's a constitutional mandate when it comes to the K-12. And that's the difference here. You're talking about a constitutional question. Now, whether it will survive, I have no idea. I don't even pretend to be a lawyer. But there does seem to be a place for somebody who's got a good argument to make that case. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Ann's right that there is a challenge to this, because this is really a very big change. We've talked about the change for a long time. And it doesn't matter what side of the issue you're on, you have to anticipate a challenge. And when that challenge happens, then it settles the issue. But, you know, this is a huge change.
Will it make schools better?
That's the goal,
right? That's the goal.
Well, sure, that's the goal. But, I mean, you look at various, it's like anything else, Jim. I mean, you can find jurisdictions where it's not this sweeping, but you can find jurisdictions where there have been more limited choice programs, and you could probably take those statistics and make the case either direction. Now, you do have people who used to be proponents of this, including some from Republican presidential administrations in the Department of Education, who are now saying, hey, time out. Some of these things we advocated in the past, expanded charter schools, you know, voucher programs for private and parochial schools, maybe not the best idea. So it's cliche to say time will tell, but this is one of those instances where clearly time will tell. But it's, in the meantime, a big victory for the governor. He'll go to the American Enterprise Institute next week in Washington, and he'll be saying, I did all of these things. I mean, if he had thrown...
He's going to have a bill signing on an education bill tomorrow. He's clearly proud of this.
To Mike's point, I mean, he got virtually everything he wanted in education. If he had thrown a return to single-class basketball in his agenda, he probably would have gotten that, too.
By the way, you deliver cliches well.
Thank you.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will more options lead to better public schools? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C. Options are important regardless. Last week's question was, is an automatic tax refund a good idea or a political ploy? 49% said good idea, 31% said political ploy, 20% said both. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A new state budget does not include a suspension of state taxes on gasoline. It's a proposal that would cost the state $300 million. When you buy gas in Indiana, you pay both an excise tax on gasoline and a sales tax. House Minority Leader Pat Bauer proposed that both those taxes be suspended over the summer months. His logic is based on the fact that a cut in the corporate income tax has already passed the General Assembly.
We have 18 cents a gallon excise tax, basically for roads, and it's probably 20 to 21 cents, depending on the price of the gas, on sales tax. So it's nearly 38 to 40 cents people pay in state taxes, and that's pretty strong.
it sounds good, but right now the focus for all of us needs to be fiscal integrity and having adequate reserves.
Does that mean you won't consider it?
Well, we're at the 11th hour here, and we're at the very end of the legislative session.
House Speaker Brian Bosma there, John Kitzenberger. Was Pat Bauer's effort here anything more than partisan mischief?
Well, he's never been above creating a little partisan mischief, so there may be some of that. But it's also been shown that this is good politics. You remember when Governor Frank O'Bannon did this in the summer of 2005?
2000.
Gasoline was $1.80 a gallon then, and he suspended the tax, and it was hugely popular. You know, many credit that with helping him win a term. So I think it's good politics, but it's not good public policy. He equated this and conflated it with the corporate tax, income tax cut. That really is only a net loss of revenue to the state of about $48, $50 million. The potential loss of revenue from this is much more, and it's just not good policy.
All right, let's talk about what is in the state budget now, which as we tape this program, it hasn't passed yet, but it seems to be a fait accompli. You've got an automatic tax refund that the governor pushed for. He found some resistance, apparently. If the state surplus gets to 10%, then half the money is going to go to the teachers' retirement fund where lawmakers wanted it to go, and half the money would go back to lawmakers. Does that seem like a good compromise?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the Senate did want to see those dollars, those surplus dollars, go into these to shore up those programs or those funds. And clearly the governor wanted to be able to say, hey, we set a mechanism in place that if we have too much money in our pockets, you can reach in and take your money back.
That's never going to happen while he's governor, right? This is all about a feather in his cap, right?
The notion probably of having some surplus has been shown over time to be of value. We all remember was that in 1990 with that budget, several times I can think of when people were tripping all over themselves to figure out ways to give back surplus dollars. I'm talking Democratic lawmakers and Republican lawmakers. And it wasn't usually a cycle of two or three years later when people were saying, I wish we had some of that money back. So,
yeah. There's also an anti-bolting provision in there to try to prevent a walkout like the 5-week walkout we saw from Democrats this year. Is that necessary?
Yeah, I think so. I think most people think so. A lot of people in Indiana felt like it was ridiculous to see people who were elected to do a job leave the state for 5 weeks. This particular law, as it's written and in the budget, would make it difficult for anybody to do that for more than 3 days. It would affect Republicans or Democrats in the future, not just the Democrats. So, if it keeps people on the job, I think it's worth doing.
Small increases for public education, $1 billion surplus.
Well, small increases for public education, but remember those vouchers come off the top of the public education funding. So the increases for public education that are there may not be there. And then on top of that, you know, the bolting thing is, you know, it's absurd on its face, and it'll be litigated again. It is a full attorney employment provision. But having said all of that, we've protected the surplus, and we've cut corporate taxes. And the rest of the tax, and we've undercut the poor, we've undercut the disabled. You know, if you're proud of that budget,
very
terrific.
Proud of that budget. And the corporate income tax need to be cut. We are one of the highest in America, and certainly the highest in the Midwest, above the national average. And a bipartisan commission voted 18-2 to recommend the legislature to do just that.
And we have to do
and
that
Obama,
now.
And Obama
to do that
also
now.
Has called to do that in his State of the Union
we
speech.
We have to do that right now.
Well, smart thing to do.
Cut education funding.
Speaking of the president, he released his birth certificate this week, and a state Senate committee vote on a birther resolution did not take place. Committee Chairman Joe Zakas canceled the hearing when a quorum failed to appear to consider the measure. It grows out of questions about the president's citizenship. The resolution was filed by Senator Mike Delf, who says he was encouraged by Donald Trump.
You think that some people are staying away so that this won't be considered?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think it's more of a federal matter anyways, and because we have so many other items on our table right now to deal with, from the budget and beyond, I think a lot of people would just say maybe this is a topic for another day.
Senator Joe Zakas there, John Schwanis. Mike Delf says he won't give up on this. He's written a letter to the president pro tem asking for a study committee. Should he give up?
Well, there are a lot of Republicans out there with conservative credentials, not just in Indiana, but around the country. Jan Brewer, governor of Arizona, who has said, you know, okay, settled issue, let's move back to more substantive
and
things.
She did that before we saw the long form.
Even, you're right, as have some other Republicans. But you have to wonder where the birthers, I mean, they've been so invested in this for a long period of time, you got to wonder where they go next. I think a lot of people got a chuckle this week when the satirical news organization The Onion came out with its report about a new group that's popped up, the afterbirthers, where they're demanding that the president release his placenta that actually supported him in the womb. So I don't know, maybe that's what comes next. I don't know.
So that was a yes.
I'll tell you what, check The Onion. They had another headline about Donald Trump that I won't repeat here.
Was it all right for me to say that one here?
Yeah. John, is this just an attempt to try to bring up every right-wing issue possible this year?
You mean his attempt to the birth certificate attempt? Mike Delf has a long history
of all these things. Not just Mike Delf. I mean, the General Assembly.
I mean, the General Assembly has, you know, supermajority in the Senate. They have a very big majority in the House. And I think that, you know, many members saw that as an opportunity to bring out issues that they've long held that they wanted to get an airing for. They've not been able to get an airing on many of these in the House for years. Senate leadership has put the thumb on them for a long time. So you're seeing the result of the dam burst right now.
Except in this case, the reason this committee didn't consider this is because some Republicans didn't show up. So
not every Republican is crazy.
We found
the
line.
The majority of them.
But we found the line, right?
Well, it's wingnut stuff. I mean, how do you prove you're born? You don't have any recollection of that. Okay? And your mother's testimony is hearsay. Where you were raised was hearsay. The document proves it. I want to see Mike Delf's birth certificate. I want to know where Mike Delf was lived. He ought to prove to us all that he has a right to be in that General Assembly. I haven't seen it. He could be anywhere.
I give Mike Delf credit for putting the pressure on President Obama to release.
You think he deserves credit?
I think he deserves credit for doing that. And,
Do you think he should release his birth certificate? Sure.
Why not?
Mike Delf?
I think everybody should.
Okay.
Everybody should.
Okay. We'll call on him to do it.
You know, he'll tell you that this isn't about President Obama. This is about the Constitution and future
elections.
Except
he didn't bring it up until 2011.
Until after Obama.
Right, but he says it's about future elections. And that's why he's not giving up on it.
Right. And, yeah.
Thank you. It's crazy.
Time now for winners and losers in the General Assembly. Ann Delaney, who is the big winner?
Oh, I think you have to give it to Mitch Daniels on the education. I don't call it reform, on his education measures. He got them passed, even though he was shot down on everything else.
Mike.
Clearly, Mitch Daniels, huge winner in this because of the education reforms and because he's got an honestly balanced budget with a $1 billion surplus at the end of it.
Mitch Daniels, for the obvious reasons, and also the freshmen in the House and Senate. This session, the Republicans, for the reasons John alluded to a moment ago, typically they're seen and not heard, freshmen. This year, a lot of the agenda we've just talked about for the last 5-10 minutes is
as
a direct result of their
seen
problem.
And not heard is a good moral for them.
I contend many of those freshmen thought this was two sessions, the first and the last. big winner.
Well, I'm going to agree that it's Mitch Daniels, and I'll just point out that this is his seventh session as governor, and most governors at this point in their term are as irrelevant can be, and this governor got everything he wanted, almost.
Prison reform and government reform.
He did not get prison reform. He'll get government reform because of the effects of the property tax caps and the financial situation.
Big loser, Mike McDaniel.
Now, clearly Pat Bauer for overplaying his hand on the walkout for 5 weeks.
Big loser.
Women and children and the elderly, because that's who this war was against.
Well, I think that the Democrats, especially in the House, are going to end up being the big losers because you look at those maps, 40 now could be 35 in the next election.
Planned Parenthood and the women that they have served.
I think Democratic interest groups, unions, Planned Parenthood.
Women, children, elderly.
Clearly, big losers. All right, finally, before we go, primary predictions. What will be the biggest story in Tuesday's primary election? Ann?
Well, I think probably the South Bend mayoral election.
Pete Buttigieg is being challenged by Ryan Dvorak, and Ryan Dvorak went negative this week. Give it to Buttigieg.
Right? Too close to call.
I think that one's true. I think Ann's true about that. I think that's the toughest one in all of Indiana.
There'll be some good races, but turnout will be disappointing again. It's hard to get people engaged in these races.
Yeah, I think that'll be, you know, we'll begin to wonder why. And I think really this will be the last time we have a primary with school board mixed in. We'll have school board elections in the fall beginning this time, so that's a good thing.
Expect a couple of Republicans to be essentially reelected, Jim Brainerd in Carmel, Charlie Henderson in Greenwood. Those are big stories. Also, look for Karen Freeman Wilson to be the new mayor of Gary.
Mm-hmm. And then Melina Kennedy for Indiana.
Melina Kennedy being the nominee and a heck of a mayor's race in the fall in Indianapolis. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.